In mid-November, he turned to the book with renewed enthusiasm. He would like to fast-track a project, Ellis Lampkins wrote to Newberg. Working with Trevor Guy, an aide who helped with business affairs, Prince, Esther, and Dan expanded the book's nebulous purview. What if it included not just annotated lyrics, but unpublished sketches, photos, and ephemera? The word memoir wasn't part of the conversation yet, but Prince wanted to begin work on the project right away. Trevor suggested convening a group of editors at Paisley Park to discuss it in person. The book coincided with an inward turn in Prince's music making. Having traveled the world in recent years with his electrifying band, Third Eye Girl, he was electing to play alone now. He envisioned a tour comprising just him and his piano. The intimate, amorphous sets would span his career without the constraints and pyrotechnics of an arena show. Hosting a group of European journalists at Paisley Park, he explained that he relished the thrill of taking the stage unadorned, paring his songs down to their essential components, and reinventing them on the fly. He'd been practicing into the night, playing alone for hours on end, his piano filling the vast darkness of his soundstage until he found something that he described as transcendence. This was what he wanted to share. He'd booked dates across Europe when terrorists in Paris attacked the Bataclan, a concert hall he'd played three times. The violence, combined with price gouging by ticket resellers, convinced him to scuttle the tour. Why not just host the shows at Paisley Park? On his home turf, he could mount a production befitting the price. As Prince's vision for piano and a microphone found clarity, his book began to take shape too. According to one friend, several of the people he loved and admired were falling ill, making him conscious of his own mortality. More than ever, he saw the value in telling his own story. On January 11, 2016, a few weeks before he gave his first solo performance, he invited three editors to meet with him at Paisley Park, where he'd explain his ambitions and decide which publishing house he wanted to work with. A meeting with multiple competing editors at the same time was an atypical arrangement. And then there were all the rumors they'd heard. Didn't he bristle at questions about his past? Would he eject anyone who used profanity or demand a contribution to his swear jar? Was it true you weren't allowed to look him in the eye? As soon as Prince walked into the meeting, any sense of trepidation dissolved. He was charming, engaged, even self-deprecating. "I ramble sometimes," he said. For the next 2 hours, he presided over a freewheeling discussion of his past, his musical philosophy, and his aspirations for the book. He wanted to write a memoir, he declared, a decision he'd arrived at so recently that even Trevor, who sat in on the meeting, was surprised by it. It would be called The Beautiful Ones, after one of the most naked, aching songs in his catalog. The story would focus on his mother, whose gaze was "the first I ever saw," he said, and who had never received proper credit for her role in his success. He shared an assortment of objects with the assembled editors. He'd asked his sister Taika to send him old family photos, including many of his parents, and a family tree. He'd also tracked down the original cover art for 1999, a collage ornamented with cutouts of a phone booth, a futuristic skyline, and a nude woman with a horse's head. And he presented the first iteration of a screenplay, Dreams, that would become Purple Rain. One of the editors asked Prince about songwriting. It was fundamentally aspirational, he thought. You write where you want to go. From his earliest memories, he told the group, he wrote music to imagine and reimagine himself. Being an artist was a constant evolution, not to mention a form of symbiosis with whoever or whatever surrounded you when you made music. He'd created a persona almost as a prophetic act. He could become the person he imagined. His whole life was an act of imagining, creating, and becoming. Today, having a persona is considered more or less essential to superstardom. For Prince, it was inseparable from his identity as an artist. Early on, he'd recognized the inherent mystery of this process and the power of preserving that mystery, or even further obscuring it. "Mystery is a word for a reason," he said. "It has a purpose." The right book could add new layers to his mystery, Prince thought, even as it stripped others away. It would have to function as his autobiography, but in a form that was sui generis, as capacious and shape-shifting as its author. Never one to shrink from grand promises, he offered only one formal guideline. It had to be the biggest music book of all time.